Welcome to the Flatbridge Ed podcast series. Hey everybody, Eric with you. Today we're going to continue with our nightmare series regarding patient scenarios. And we've had thousands of downloads on this series, and we've talked about multiple critical care topics. And so today we're going to actually continue with that, and we're going to specifically talk about neonatal emergencies. And we're going to use a case study that I came across, and we're going to talk about the case, and then we're going to kind of break that down into cyanotic versus acyanotic heart defects, neonatal heart defects, and how we can manage those patients. Obviously, when we're talking about pediatrics and we're talking about neonates, that is a kind of a subset where usually you have specialty teams that handle those patients. But if you're on a ground ambulance or you're flying, it's very possible that you could be called to a scene for a patient that actually has this phenomenon that's undiagnosed. So a lot of times around the country, people are NRP credentialed. But as far as neonatal emergencies, ductal lesions, cyanotic versus acyanotic problems, the training is very limited. So we're going to touch on that. I'm going to briefly go into cyanotic versus acyanotic heart defects and how we kind of can look at those things a little bit differently. And then we're going to apply all this into this patient scenario and look at the actual diagnosis, and I'll break down the actual neonatal heart defect that this baby was finally diagnosed with. All right, so let's start this case. We have a patient that you're toned to for a, we'll just say, a scene flight, unknown, and you're toned and you're given the information that you have a possible 3 to 4 day old male that is not breathing. EMS is on scene, and they're performing CPR at this time and positive pressure ventilation. You arrive on scene, you find a 3 day old male. The parents state they haven't had any prenatal care. There was a home delivery. There was no care after the delivery, and the patient hadn't seen an obstetrician or a pediatrician since birth. So no care whatsoever. They state that the patient had some problems with some poor feeding. They noticed that he was constantly fussy, and today they found him becoming more and more apneic. And when EMS arrived, the baby was not breathing, and had a pulse rate of 20. So at this time, when you arrive on scene, the baby is cyanotic looking. Pulse rate is up into the high 80s, and the baby is spontaneously breathing. So EMS had provided CPR, and they had provided positive pressure ventilation, which is, remember, the standard for NRP. You always start with positive pressure ventilation first. If that doesn't work after 30 seconds, then you're going to start compressions if your heart rate is below 80, and then once that has either worked or not worked, you're going to kind of go down your algorithm. So obviously EMS did a great job, and they got the baby spontaneously breathing again. So let's talk about some things here. You have a very rural setting. You have an Amish family. A lot of times, for those of you that are listening and you're not in that area of the United States, if you're on the West Coast, you know, there's not really any Amish or Mennonite families on that end of the country. You know, they're predominantly in the northeast area, Kentucky, Tennessee, on up into Ohio and Pennsylvania. And, you know, they're very private. They often don't seek any outside care. And so if there's any problems with a baby whatsoever, you know, they're not going to have any idea. It's going to be undiagnosed. So this is exactly what was going on with this child. So anytime, for those of you that are preparing for any exams, anytime you ever hear this type of scenario where you have a few day old up to a couple weeks old baby, whether it's male or female, and they're fussy, they're cyanotic, they just don't want to feed, always be thinking about a ductal heart defect. Okay, so what is a ductal heart defect? Well, a ductal heart defect is basically means that you have a baby that's dependent on ductal flow. Your ductus is the way that your body is circulated with oxygenated blood while you're in utero, from oxygenation coming from the placenta as it goes in through the liver and up into the heart. And so when you're born, because of oxygenation and just spontaneous breathing, that ductus normally closes. So there's multiple reasons why a baby may have a ductal-dependent lesion. And what I mean by ductal-dependent lesion is there's usually another problem with the heart. Like I said, there's two types of heart defects. There's a cyanotic heart defect, and there's an acyanotic heart defect. So let's talk about a cyanotic heart defect first. The first one, a cyanotic heart defect, means that they're absolutely dependent on ductal flow. So again, we're back to that ductal flow. When we talk about ductal flow, what we need is we want that ductus to remain open. That may be the only way that this baby is actually getting any oxygenation whatsoever. They also have a right-to-left shunt. So what that means is that you basically have a shunt going from the right side to the left side. You have deoxygenated blood from the right side that's mixing oxygenated blood to the left side. So these babies, again, have a secondary problem, a secondary heart defect, whether it's tetralogy of Fallot, whether it's a ventral septal defect. There's multiple heart defects that can cause a right-to-left shunt. These babies, though, will need to maintain a SAT in the low 70s. And if you've ever went to a neonate style clinical, you've seen these babies where, you know, they don't ever want their O2 SATs being greater than 71, 72, 73%. The reason why is oxygenation of itself causes that ductus to close. So your babies, if they have a ductal-dependent lesion like that, you don't want that ductus to close. And that's exactly what was going on with this child. This child had a problem, has a secondary heart defect, and we'll identify that here in a few minutes, because of just oxygenation and being out in the atmospheric air and things like that, that ductus probably started closing. And that was the only way that that child was maintaining any oxygenation. Well, after a while, we know that your heart is driven off of oxygenation. That's called the Fick principle. Babies, all their cardiac output is based off of their heart rate. They've got to have a high heart rate like that. So if you start having deoxygenation, you have a heart rate that starts dropping like that, they're going to become apneic, and they're not going to be able to sustain that. So this is a very, very important concept. You would think that you would want to give them a lot of oxygen, but that's absolutely not the case. In this situation, you would never want to give them high concentrations of oxygen. You would want to bag them at room air, and just enough to kind of trigger that spontaneous respiration again. Oftentimes, what they'll even do in the hospitals is they will actually decrease, they'll do oxygen mixing with another oxygen source or another gas source, and they'll try to get that concentration of oxygen down to 17 to 18%. And we know that we breathe at 21% oxygen. So it's very, very important to limit how much oxygenation that these babies are getting. So in the field in this situation, all you're going to be wanting to do is you're going to be wanting to maintain the lowest SAT possible to allow them to perfuse, make sure their heart rate stays up, and that's it. What these babies need is they need a drug called prostaglandin. And prostaglandin is given to these babies to maintain that ductal dependent lesion open. You want to maintain that open. So that's the medication that's given. And obviously, if you're flying on a helicopter or you're in the back of an ambulance, we don't have access to that medication. So it's basically going to be supportive care until you get that child to a facility that can handle that patient. So that's essentially a cyanotic heart defect. And again, like I said, there's multiple cyanotic heart defects. So there's many heart defects that we can talk about related to cyanotic versus acyanotic heart disease. So now that we've talked about cyanotic heart defects, let's talk about acyanotic heart defects. Basically, an acyanotic heart defect means that there's a problem on the left side of the heart. There's a ventricular inflow or outflow obstruction. This causes a backflow of blood into the lungs, into the pulmonary veins, and causes congestive heart failure. So this is essentially a left-to-right shunt instead of a right-to-left shunt. This is a left-to-right shunt. This causes hypoxia. This causes pulmonary hypertension. And so that's the difference between an acyanotic heart defect and a cyanotic heart defect. So let's talk about just real quickly the different types of heart defects. I'm just going to kind of touch on these really, really quickly. So a co-articulation of the aorta, that's a heart defect that would be a left-sided problem. So that's going to be an acyanotic heart defect. And essentially what you have is you have a narrowing of the aorta,
of that aortic arch. And so you have a back pressure that's built up into the left ventricle. That causes left ventricular hypertrophy. It causes a backflow up into the mitral valve and up through the lungs, causes pulmonary hypertension and associated, if it's bad enough, an associated CHF. The next one is called tetralogy of Fallot. This is a problem with multiple aspects of the heart. And I'm going to come back to this because this is exactly what the baby was diagnosed with. The next one is going to be just patent ductus arteriosus. This is essentially what we're talking about, but the baby is just diagnosed with a patent ductus arteriosus. This is going to be a cyanotic heart defect. And if there's no other heart defect associated with this ductus being open, then what they'll do is they'll give a medication called endomethacin. And endomethacin is a medication that they give when oxygenation by itself doesn't cause that ductus to close. They'll administer endomethacin, and by doing that, that ductus will close, and then the baby will have a normal circulation in the heart. The next one is called transposition of the great vessels. This is, again, kind of a mixed bag. This is going to be a cyanotic heart defect mainly, because what you have is essentially, if you remember how our blood flows through our heart, it comes into our right atrium, comes down through our tricuspid valve, goes down to our right ventricle, and comes up into our pulmonary artery and our pulmonic valve. Well, in transposition of the great vessel, basically you have your aorta and your pulmonary artery are switched. So instead of deoxygenated blood going up into that pulmonary artery, it now goes up into the aorta. And if deoxygenated blood is going up in the aorta, then that's actually sending deoxygenated blood through the aorta and out through the body, and your body's constantly getting deoxygenated blood. The same is true if your aorta now is getting all the deoxygenated blood, now your pulmonary artery is getting all the oxygenated blood. So everything is reversed. So this patient is extremely ductal dependent. The only way this patient's getting any oxygenation whatsoever is by that ductal lesion maintaining patency. So these patients are going to be given prostaglandin for patency until this can be fixed. And the procedure to fix this is a pretty big deal. It's called the Jantine procedure, and they'll actually do an arterial switch and they'll flip these vessels around. So you can imagine how big of a deal that is. The next one is called a ventral septal defect, and this is essentially just a patch or an opening between the right ventricle and the left ventricle. So essentially, instead of blood flowing up through the pulmonic valve into the pulmonary artery, there's a lot of deoxygenated blood that should be going up through there, but it actually mixes into oxygenated blood into that left ventricle, so you have mixing. So again, this patient is going to be dependent on PDA patency for oxygenation. Until they fix this, they'll actually do a surgical patch to block the blood and fix that hole in between the left and the right ventricle there. And they'll maintain that patency of that PDA with prostaglandin administration. And then the last one, and this is a real bad one, is called a hypoplastic left heart. And essentially what happens in this situation is you have a baby that has a very, very large right atrium and large right ventricle, and they have no left ventricle. So the blood comes down through the right atrium, down into the right ventricle, up through the pulmonic valve, goes and gets oxygenated through the lungs like normal, and as it comes down through the mitral valve and it goes into the right atrium, it stops. There's nothing else. It can't go down into the ventricle because there's no ventricle there. So all that pressure, all that blood that should be going down to that left ventricle gets pushed back up into the lungs. You have a very, very prominent CHF, very, very sick patient, and a lot of times these patients are so gravely sick that they don't survive. Okay, so back to our patient that we started with. Again, we have a 3 to 4 day old male, has had a pretty significant period of apnea, had a heart rate down into the 20s. EMS has resuscitated them. At this point, have a SAT of I think 85-86%, and you're flying them to the closest pediatric NICU. So again, in this situation, you should automatically be thinking that you have a ductal heart defect. So when we talk about NRP, NRP states that when we deliver a normal baby or any baby
that for that matter. We want to maintain a sat that would match a ductal O2 sat. And basically what that is that you have a ductal O2 sat that starts at 60 to 65% at 1 minute. So at the 1 minute mark, when you deliver a baby, a 60 to 65% sat is appropriate. We don't want to be giving high concentrations of oxygen to these babies. At 2 minutes, your sat should be 65 to 70. At 3 minutes, your sat should be 70 to 75. At 4 minutes, your sat should be 75 to 80. And at 5 minutes, your sat should be 80 to 85. And then it jumps all the way to 10 minutes, and that's where your sat should be about 90 to 92%. So over 10 minutes, that O2 sat should climb accordingly based on how the baby's doing. So it's all right to have a low O2 sat. So if you're transporting this baby, you should, again, automatically be thinking that there's a ductal heart defect. A baby shouldn't just become apneic like that, right? And match that with the scenario, match that with the patient presentation. No neonatal care, no prenatal care to the mom. There hasn't been any care. The baby's been cyanotic, has been fussy, poor feeding, all those things automatically clue you in there. So maintaining the sat, in the 70s to 80s on this baby would be appropriate, because we don't want another period of apnea like that. Babies, children, they don't handle hypoxia very well. We know that if they become very hypoxic, a lot of times they're going to become asystolic. And once they become asystolic, we're not going to be able to get them back. So how do we treat this kid? Well, we're just going to maintain a heart rate that's appropriate. We're going to limit the oxygenation, supportive care. You're going to start an IV. You know, a little stimulation like that is a great thing. You know, start an IV. If you can't get an IV after a couple attempts, you know, go straight to an IO. Evaluate fluid resuscitation guidelines. And remember, this baby's 3 days old, 3 to 4 days old. So we're going to go 10 mils per kilo on him. You know, so if the baby is, I believe this baby was about 4 kilos, that baby's going to get a pretty good fluid bolus. So, you know, you could go 30 to 40 on your fluid bolus. And remember, we're going to also always check a blood sugar. Babies will burn through their blood sugar very, very quickly. I don't think we're very good at it. It's very hard, especially with kids that young, maintaining a good temperature regulation for them. So, you know, we're taking them out of an environment. We're putting them in an aircraft. If we have a hot load, you know, we could have rotor wash and things like that. So always be thinking about that. So it's very easy for the baby's body temperature, because of the size of their body surface area in comparison to their weight, to burn through their sugar. And we know that your sugar is released from your liver, right? Glycogen is released. It turns into glucose, and that's what is stimulating your shivering. So the kid, you don't want them to start shivering and burning through the sugar. The other thing that you always want to think about is, a lot of times what you'll do is you'll check a blood sugar, and let's say it's 120. You check another sugar 10, 15 minutes later on a kid like this, and most often it's going to shoot up. It's going to actually increase. The ones I've seen, they've increased to the 150s, 160 range. That's in association, again, with, is the kid maintaining a good temperature, or is the kid stressed, right? If the kid is stressed, he's going to release sugar. So he's going to have a good spike up, but he's going to crash back down. So we want to make sure that we're giving any type of maintenance infusion. You're going maybe, a sugar solution, D5 and a quarter, something like that. And then use your maintenance infusion calculation, the 4-2-1 rule. So in this situation, you know, you're transporting him to a NICU facility that can handle him, maybe give them plenty of notice so they can have a NICU team up there with an isolate. You know, this kid is going to need prostaglandin immediately. So a few things on the prostaglandin. Prostaglandin is a medication that obviously is used for those patients that need to maintain the ductal flow. And the big side effect of prostaglandin is apnea. So you start administering prostaglandin to maintain that ductal dependent lesion, they're going to become apneic because of the prostaglandin. So anytime you're transporting a patient that's on prostaglandin, you need to intubate them and put them on the ventilator. That's a number one rule there. So this baby was diagnosed with tetralogy of Fallot. And the big thing with tetralogy of Fallot is this is the most common cyanotic heart defect. And there's multiple problems with this heart, and we'll go through each one of them. The first problem is they have a huge ventral septal defect. So I said before that you can have a baby that just has a ventral septal defect, and that's it. In tetralogy of Fallot, you have 3 to 4 different problems with this heart, the first one being that ventral septal defect. So you have deoxygenated blood from that right ventricle mixing with oxygenated blood from the left ventricle. The next problem you have is you have a stenotic pulmonic valve. So we said if you trace the blood through the heart, we have blood that comes in from the superior vena cava. It comes down into the right atrium. That's your preload. About 80% of your blood actually just flows right through the tricuspid valve into that right ventricle. And that right ventricle fills up. Atrial kick fills up the rest of it, the last 20%. And that blood is propelled up into the pulmonic valve, into the pulmonary artery. Well, in this situation, you have a stenotic pulmonic valve. So you have a pulmonic valve that's not working appropriately. So it's causing a back pressure. So what now happens is instead of that blood free flowing up through that pulmonic valve, it actually pushes back down. It causes a Frank-Starling effect of that right ventricle. You actually start having right ventricular hypertrophy. So now you have a right ventricle that's starting to thicken. The wall's starting to thicken. It's starting to become very big. Your ejection fraction on that right ventricle is becoming less and less. You have a pulmonic valve that's stenotic, so you're not getting the blood up into the pulmonary artery to be oxygenated. You also have a problem with that ventral septal defect. So your pulmonic valve is causing a back pressure, and now that deoxygenated blood is flowing through that ventral septal defect even more. So this is just a revolving problem. It starts causing a big rightward displacement of the aorta because of all this back pressure of the pulmonic valve, the thickening of the wall of the right ventricle, and the ventral septal defect. So your baby's constantly going to be cyanotic. They're basically called blue baby syndrome. They're going to have severe hypoxia. But remember, the only thing that's going to maintain any type of oxygenation for this kid is going to be a ductal-dependent baby. So having that PDA open is the only thing that's going to get them any oxygenation. So these kids are going to need to be put on prostaglandin. They're going to have that ventral septal defect fixed. They're going to have the pulmonary artery actually cathed and dilated and fixed. And then once all of those procedures are taken care of, then they'll slowly start closing that ductal lesion with endomethacin. As far as the right ventricular hypertrophy that happens, if it's prominent enough, a lot of times if it's early on, you know, the patients will actually live a very healthy life, and there's not a lot of problems. But if you think about it, they basically at a very, very young age, they have right-sided heart failure already. So there could be problems down the road. And we know right-sided heart failure, if it progresses and continues to progress, is going to lead to left-sided heart failure. So that's essentially tetralogy of Fallot. That's what this baby suffered from. It was diagnosed by just simple apnea like this, and a very, very serious thing. So, you know, as far as EMS crew, they did a very, very good job as far as managing the airway, doing chest compressions. You know, we know that airway and circulation are the big two things when it comes to our babies, our pediatrics. They respond very, very well to those treatments. So that's all I have as far as ductal-dependent lesions. If you have any questions regarding this, please email me at eric@flatbridgeed.com. I love your comments. You know, this case was actually given to me by somebody out. He had emailed me this case, so I appreciate that. You know, keep them coming. And very interesting. And if you have any questions, just let us know. Remember, we have our newest book, the Fast Exam Prep Book, that's on sale on our website. We're actually selling them as a bundle package, and we've been selling a lot of them. A lot of success there, or you can get them on Amazon.com. They're the same price either way. So, you know, just come to our website, and I ship those out within 24 hours. On behalf of everybody here at FlightBridgeEd, we really appreciate all of you guys and the listeners, and we thank you so much.
We want to thank you for following FlightBridgeEd.